Good morning. You're listening to Poco and Boco, people of color in Boulder County, on KGNU Community Radio. I'm your host, Nikhil Mankekar. Today's guest is Representative Joe Salazar, and who's also a candidate for Attorney General. And Joe, welcome to the show.
Good morning. How are you?
Doing well. How are you doing?
Doing all right.
Well, great. Let's just dive into it. There's been a lot in the news lately, a lot happening around issues that you definitely champion at the state level. DACA, you introduced a bill last session that was defeated, the Freedom Defense Act, protecting Dreamers. Why don't you talk about that and what you plan to do?
Sure. So about September of last year, about this time actually last year, I started getting a bad feeling that it could be possible that Trump could win the presidency. And I started reaching out to partners to start developing a bill because of his really hateful rhetoric towards immigrants and the Muslim community and so many others. I mean, God, there was hardly a group he didn't touch. I felt that it was necessary to draft a bill under the 10th Amendment of the United States Constitution using, ironically enough, using Justice Scalia's own opinions on the 10th Amendment And the 10th Amendment is a state's rights amendment. So basically, whatever powers aren't given to the federal government are reserved for the states. So like local law enforcement, things of that nature, that's our power. We decide what's going to happen with local law enforcement. The federal government cannot co-opt that or commandeer our local law enforcement. So I drafted a bill that would protect our communities, particularly the Muslim community, the undocumented community, the Jewish community, and so many others from, number one, prohibiting the state and local governments from having to share any information with the Trump administration. Number two, prohibiting the creation of any type of internment camps, any type of registries. It prohibited the use of any type of state or local resources, like land resources and creating any type of detention centers. Mm-hmm. So it was a really tightly written bill that protected our communities from being terrorized by this administration. It got through the House just fine. We had a number of great and wonderful partners testify for the bill: the Anti-Defamation League, the ACLU, community organizations throughout the state came and testified, and then it got to a Republican-controlled Senate and they killed it. And now we're seeing today that. That we have cities that are developing sanctuary city policies. Had this bill passed, we wouldn't have had to deal with Denver or any other city having to do a sanctuary city policy because the state would have protected everybody mm-hmm. under the 10th Amendment.
Yeah, we passed a sanctuary city policy in Boulder. Myself, the Colorado Immigrant Rights Coalition, really championed that, along with several city council people led the effort. And, you know, one of the unique things we did in Boulder was we had a legitimate policy that was codified into the law. A lot of cities back when Trump got in office talked about themselves as sanctuary cities, but there was kind of no legal ground on it. It was just kind of a soft designation with no teeth to it. Now you see, obviously, with what's been happening, cities going back and actually needing to codify that into law. So the Freedom of Defense Act, you plan on bringing it back the next session.
I do plan on bringing it back. And, you know, the important aspect of it is that the 10th Amendment, municipalities and cities can't use a 10th Amendment. That's a state's rights power, not a municipal power. Yeah. And so that's why it's important to get this bill passed, is because we're able to use the cloak of the 10th Amendment to protect the localities, the municipalities, through the 10th Amendment, through the state's power to protect those policies.
Yeah, it just amazes me because I mean we deal with these issues and the communities affected by these issues day in and day out, but the general population has such a little understanding of the impact of what happened in just these past few weeks, especially on kids. Think about college students, people who've lived in this country their whole lives. About to get a college degree, and all of a sudden, the national hate comes out. they don't feel the laws are protecting them. They don't know who's behind them. What are some of the outcomes you'd like to see with this bill next time? Do you see people really who voted against it? Is there any chance to really making them understand and connect with that on that human level of why this bill is needed?
Well, you know, it's really difficult to get my colleagues in the Senate, particularly my Republican colleagues, to understand the necessity of these kinds of bills to protect communities from being terrorized. What it's going to take people calling their not only their own senators, but also Republican senators reaching out to them saying, hey, look, this is why we need this. It's a national disgrace that Trump rescinded the executive order on DACA. We could see that on a congressional level that Republican senators and Congress folks are scrambling to try to figure out what to do about it. Here at the state level, you can help protect our communities. And so that's what we need to do is have people call up every single Republican senator in the Colorado Senate to advocate for this bill.
Absolutely. Beyond that, just the nationally the hate, the rise in hate groups, what we saw throughout the past national election in hate speech is now coming to fruition. It's just people are out. They think they can say anything they want, and now it's manifesting into actions and violence. You have a bill you'll be introducing to address that in the next session as well.
Yes, we're working on a bill that classifies violent white supremacist groups as domestic terrorists. Illinois passed a resolution on it about a few weeks back. I think that, if I remember correctly, Ohio is working on a bill right now, and we are as well. And the point is, and people are really like, well, you know, what about the First Amendment? Well, the First Amendment only talks about peaceably assemble, right? And right. I'm targeting the violent aspect of it. So I think that we'll be fine. We'll be on firm constitutional grounds by targeting the violent white supremacist groups, those that incite or threaten or engage in violence against other individuals because of their race or their color or ethnicity. And we're also going to be protecting the disabled, protecting on gender, protecting on religion and even homelessness. Because I saw a study just recently where the homeless are the most affected group by hate. They're targeted for hate crimes. Most affected group more than any other group, and that's really disgusting. In fact, a homeless person was beaten to death in Colorado Springs, I think within the past couple of years, and for the mere fact that he was homeless, and this teen was bragging about it. So yeah, we'll have the homeless in there too to protect them.
Yeah. Who's teaming with you? I mean, you're working with the Anti-Defamation League on that. Is that around developing language in the bill?
Yeah, we just got the bill up and running just a couple of weeks back. And in fact, we don't even have bill language. We should get that bill language, I believe, sometime this week. But I reached out to the Anti-Defamation League. I've reached out to the ACLU. ACLU is going to be a very seriously primed partner in this, because we want to make sure that we're not violating civil liberties, that we are targeting the violent aspect of things, of these groups. And, I'll be reaching out to all the Muslim, Persian, undocumented communities, the advocates for the homeless, you name it. I mean, the disability rights groups. I'm going to be building up these coalitions. That way, when we introduce this bill coming up in January, these coalitions are built and we're ready to go.
Yeah. It's funny, in Boulder County, people think we don't have these issues. And it's so funny because I can speak personally myself, people I know, people we represent in the city. It's happening. It's just now getting out in the public, and so we have to strike a balance almost between how much of attention you give it, but at the same time we have a responsibility to let the community know what's happening and who's in that community and doing what, especially if it's inciting hate and violence.
You know, I want to give some perspective to this conversation about what we have to deal with at the state capitol. The Colorado Republican Party tweeted out on Friday, criticism towards the Southern Poverty Law Center. That's the law center that actually identifies hate groups throughout the country, and really targeted them. And it resulted in a huge Twitter battle. And we had organizations come out. We had community organizations come out demanding that the Colorado GOP apologize for attacking the Southern Poverty Law Center. And they refused to do it. And then they engaged in rhetoric saying that, hate crimes aren't happening. So last night, I compiled a huge list of hate crimes that have happened in Colorado since last year alone, right? Including as of I believe this past Friday, I think there was a swastika scrawled on a Jewish family's home here in Boulder.
Yeah.
And so I sent that out to the GOP. This is what's happening. Get your heads out of the sand. Stop targeting the Southern Poverty Law Center. But that's what we have to deal with this other party in power in the state legislature, and it's really disgusting that in 2017 we have a major political party disbelieving that hate these bias motivated crimes are occurring in the state of Colorado.
Well. You have, it's such an interesting dynamic. This it seems like things have shifted. I mean, would you think, say, even a decade ago, even in 2012, would you have this kind of attitude, like the Southern Poverty Law Center would be getting attacked instead of these hate crimes have been committed? What can we do about that? I mean, do you think it's is it about getting elected? Will it get people reelected? Can they campaign on this?
I really don't know what the GOP's plan is, but it almost seems like a military strategy to me that they attack a beloved group such as and revered group like the Southern Poverty Law Center to see how quickly we'll mass to their defense, and when they saw that we would, then they backed off, but they wouldn't apologize. So I don't know. I mean, I think that what we've seen And actually, since 2008, we've seen an increase in hate crimes, since Obama's first election and then again in 2012. But, with this Trump administration emboldening white supremacist groups and hate groups, we have to be on our toes, and we have to protect our revered organizations like Southern Poverty Law Center as much as possible. I imagine that the ADL, I know that there's been increases in hate crimes, or at least hate rhetoric towards the ADL and other groups, and we have to protect them.
Yeah, it's so strange to see people who have so much and have so much can legitimately expect so much around their own safety, and then going out and framing themselves as victims when hate is committed and someone points it out, just pointing it out, they try to flip it and say, well, that makes us victims, and this is PC, right? It's like calling things politically correct and playing with people's lives, playing with hate, inciting hate and violence. You can't really equate the two, but that national dialogue and the way to obfuscate the issue, I mean, how has that affected your ability to gain support for these bills?
Yeah, so this false narrative that they've been developing over the past several years is that, well, if you don't agree with us, then all of a sudden you're the oppressed and we're the victims, right?
Yeah.
And then, the whole definition behind hate groups is that, they oppress people based off of certain characteristics. But now they're acting like they're the oppressed ones, because when you tell them to stop oppressing people, then all of a sudden now you're oppressing them because they can't oppress others,
mm-hmm.
Which is just a ridiculous hamster's wheel where, you're just spinning round and round with them. And I think that's why I'm bringing this bill. It's one of the reasons why I'm bringing this bill is we have to hit it head on.
Yeah.
We have to stop this false narrative that they're the victims when they are perpetrating hate crimes against individuals. You don't have a right to perpetrate a hate crime against anybody. And so it'll be interesting to see how my Republican colleagues in the House and in the Senate respond to this bill once we introduce it and start getting it getting into committee.
Great, fantastic. And you have this came because you had massive public interest in doing this.
I right after the Charlottesville incident, there were tons of people on Facebook just reaching out to me saying, Rep, can you do something about this? And you know, and I'm a representative of the people, and I listened to what they had to say and their requests, and I started looking into it, started doing my research, and I would say probably about a week after the Charlottesville incident, I said, all right, I think I have enough legal research on this to be able to move forward.
Excellent. Beyond that, you mentioned homelessness, and you know, the homeless are some of the most, it's so disempowering. And it's so easy to, like you talk about, hate groups will target them. They pick on people who have the least amount of power and who it's easy to get away with victimizing. And you've introduced bills at the state level to protect the homeless, including the Homeless Right to Rest Act. Talk about that and some of what's happening. Even do you plan to reintroduce that this next session?
Yeah, we plan on reintroducing it. Representative Javon Melton and I, members of the Doghouse Dems, you know, we bring it every single year. We'll bring it again this year. You know, we've tried to work with the cities to whittle it down, to water it down to a point where they could feel comfortable, but yet still trying to protect the rights of our homeless brothers, sisters, and others. And so, you know, we're going to bring it back again, but I'm not so certain that we're going to water it down this time around. We've tried working with these cities, and it's a matter of you know, we're trying to legislate from a position of humanity here, and it's just abundantly and absolutely wrong to criminalize the homeless community for the mere fact of doing the very basic acts of humanity, which is to rest, to sit down, to want to eat, to sleep. I mean, we need to figure out the issue of homelessness in a different way outside of the criminalization.
Absolutely. And I think there's such a, you know, through myself, the Human Relations Commission and local groups, we've done a lot on this issue locally in Boulder, because it is a hot button issue right now. And you have this dynamic of the, you know, cost of land going up, affordable housing issues, and, you know, more money coming into town. People see one of the common statements I get when I talk about these issues locally, and we approach it from a level of compassion to the homeless, because we get out and we actually know these people, we talk to these people, these are members of our community, and we have a responsibility to really include them in the community and find out what their needs are, just like anyone else in the community, and address them. But there's a common idea, well, it's unsightly, and there's such a detachment from the basic humanity of our homeless. And so a common theme to everything we just talked about is this just this lack of compassion for people and a lack of personal incentive to really understand someone else's circumstances. I mean, do you see you've been doing this a long time. Have you talk about that this kind of diminishing of just basic compassion?
Yeah. So when I came out and endorsed Bernie Sanders a year and a half ago, I wrote in my statement that the reason why I was supporting him, and it had nothing, you know, against Secretary Clinton, but the reason why I was supporting him was because he led from a position of humanity. He understands compassion at the human level, and that's why I endorsed him. And since then, since I wrote that, that's what I've been using everywhere I go. Is that, you know, we have to lead, we have to legislate from a position of humanity at that very basic human level. And I've seen a lack of compassion. I've been at the state capitol these past 5 years, being the vice chair of state affairs, the vice chair of judiciary. What I have seen at the state capitol is just the utter monopoly of special interests, the lobbying group of you know, oil and gas and things of that nature that take precedence over the human being.
Yeah.
And that's what is astounding to me, right? And so when we have good city councils like Boulder, and I think that Boulder has a most excellent city council, but not legislating from a position of humanity where they target and they criminalize the homeless human being, I mean, that hurts me, because I expect better than that from Boulder City Council and Denver City Council, for that matter. And so, you know, I really wish that, that we would get to the basic core of being compassionate as legislators or as elected officials and deal with the human being at the human level.
Yeah, I think one of the things that can increase that compassion and the way I see it coming out is in the when you understand the history of a city. And we got into the history of Boulder some when we introduced Indigenous Peoples Day that replaced Columbus Day last fall. And you actually came out and testified when I presented to city council on that. So thank you for that.
And so
you came out, and one of the inspirations for doing this was that you'd introduced a bill at the state level to do this. Do you plan on, it was defeated, do you plan on bringing that initiative back?
I do plan on bringing it back. We introduced it a year and a half ago. It was the 2016 session. That was the first time repeal Columbus Day bill had ever been heard in committee in the history of the state of Colorado. And think about that. It took until 2016 to actually have its first committee hearing. And it didn't pass out of a Democrat controlled House committee. And so we reintroduced it again, and it was a bill that replaced Columbus Day with Indigenous Peoples Day, and then I came out here to Boulder to advocate for your change. And so the American Indian community said, well, you know, we don't want to pit us against the Italian American community. What we want, we don't want an Indigenous Peoples Day. Mm-hmm. We just want to get rid of Columbus Day. So when you reintroduce the bill in 2017, just repeal Columbus Day. Don't replace it with anything. So that's what I did. And once again, we had a Democrat-controlled House committee kill it by, I believe it was by one vote. And the American Indian community is just, you know, just beside itself trying to figure out, well, my God, we have Republicans who, you know, rarely, if any, at any point support us. And now we have Democrats turning their backs on us, too. We're in 2017. What's it going to take for people to understand that we shouldn't be honoring a slave trader who engaged in crimes against humanity? That's a really relevant question.
Yeah, you know, as we passed it and we moved through the process last year as a city in Boulder and the Human Relations Commission and our Indigenous Peoples Day Resolution Committee that I was on, it's interesting when you look at a population confronting its past or how they choose not to. You know, on the one hand, Colorado, they'll say, well, it wasn't a slave state and, you know, there should be some kind of pride taken in that, but actually, that's actually not true. When you look at the hidden histories of immigrant population, or Latino history, or Asian immigrants, and our Indigenous people itself, that's the legacy we have to live with. I mean, we may not have these Confederate national monuments locally, but we have public lands and Indian removal policies that moved Indians off of the land and have been named by the people after the people who did that. So we have our own legacies to confront with that. So it's good right. that we plan to at the state level to confront that as well.
And I plan on I don't think I answered the question. I plan on reintroducing it in 2018.
Okay. Well, hopefully what we did gives you some momentum on that.
Right on.
Joe, why don't we finish up? You're running for Attorney General in the state of Colorado. Why don't you talk about that? Why are you running?
Yeah, so I'm running because the Attorney General's office is known as the people's lawyer. The Attorney General is supposed to represent the interests of the people of the state of Colorado. And what we have seen in the past multiple iterations and administrations of the Attorney General's office are attorneys general who represent the special interest. We see one right now in Cynthia Kaufman, who is willing to file lawsuits against Boulder County and in favor of special interests, the multi-billion dollar oil and gas industry. That's not what the Attorney General's office is there for. The Attorney General's office is there for the people. My legislative record demonstrates that I have been there for the people. I am at every protest, march, and rally that I can go to on the front lines, because that's what it means to be a representative, is you have to be there on the front lines with the people. And if you're not, then what's going to cause the people to believe that you're going to be on the front lines for them behind the scenes?